Hello and welcome to Women on the Line, a national women's current affairs program providing a gender analysis of contemporary issues from Australia and internationally. I'm Giselle Hanna. On today's show, we look at the protest movement that has erupted in India in response to the regressive Modi government's anti-Muslim laws. India's Hindu supremacist BJP government has stepped up its state repression by ramming through a reactionary Citizenship Amendment Act in early December 2019. The law grants Indian citizenship to non-Muslim immigrants from Pakistan, Bangladesh, and Afghanistan, but denies that right to Muslims from any country in South Asia. Immigrants from other countries in the region, including Tamils from Sri Lanka and Rohingya from Myanmar, are also excluded. Workers, students and other parts of civil society have been protesting since November last year in an effort to defeat the legislation. And protests are continuing, with a nationwide general strike on the 8th of January bringing tens of millions of workers to the streets. In Shaheen Bagh, a neighbourhood in South Delhi, some 200 women have been holding a permanent protest camp for over a month and vow not to be moved until the law is lifted. Joining me on the program today to discuss the Citizenship Amendment Act of India, its implications for communal violence and the growing protest movement in opposition to it, I'm joined by Shivani Kul, who starts off this interview by introducing herself.
Hi, I'm Shivani and I'm from India. I'm from a political party called Revolutionary Workers Party of India, and I'm a spokesperson of RWPI. And I'm also active with many trade unions in India.
So, of course, the purpose of our conversation today is the very, very regressive and chauvinist Citizenship Amendment Act. Can you start off by telling us what is the Citizenship Amendment Act?
Citizenship Amendment Act has been recently passed by the Parliament of India. Earlier, it was a proposed bill, but in December last year, the government passed this act, and now it's a full-blown law in India. And for the first time in the history of independent India, religion has been made a criteria for granting citizenship. Ostensibly, the act talks about giving citizenship to all those persecuted minorities who are from either Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Bangladesh. But on the other hand, it also excludes Muslims. That Muslims do not form part of these, persecuted minorities. So it's blatantly discriminatory. It's totally divisive, and it's even going against the tenets of bourgeois democratic, constitutional framework in India. So for the first time, such a massive, a discriminatory law has been passed. It makes religion as a ground for granting citizenship to people. But the fear is that it's not the actual object of the law, because many agencies of government have said that even if going by the very various provisions of this act, hardly 31,000 people will find place register, even if all the procedures are followed. So I believe that the real intent in passing this amendment, in passing this law, is totally different. And it's not that, government is very much bothered about persecuted minorities. And in those terms, they talk about Hindus, they talk about Sikhs, they talk about Jains, Buddhists, Parsis, but not Muslims. But that is on the face of it, you'll see that it's discriminatory, but the real intent lies somewhere else and totally a discriminatory and divisive law.
So why is it? Why has it been introduced? And not just why has it been introduced, why has it been introduced now? What is it about the current political context of India that this is being introduced now?
This is a very pertinent question going by the political context in which this act is being, this amendment is being introduced, because I just want to clarify that it's not that for the first time some amendment has been made to the Citizenship Act in India. The original act dates back to 1955 and there have been many amendments. But for the first time, religion has been made into a ground. And it also goes with the kind of Hindutva fascist, communal fascist politics of current regime. And the same government in 2003 had actually discussed all these things that, you know, they will introduce religion as a ground for citizenship. They will also introduce a national register for citizens. And during the current Lok Sabha elections, the elections that were held in last May, one of the planks, one of the electoral promises that the Modi government, the BJP made that time was that they are going to amend the Citizenship Act. So now on the face of it, it's true that the act is anti-Muslim. It's anti-secular tenets, whatever, you know, secularism is there in the Indian constitution. But it's also, you know, important to know that Muslims will be the direct victims of any such drive, whether it's through CAA or whether it will be through NRC, National Register of Citizen. But most of the Hindus will also, you know, land up in any such exercise on this list, because most of the people in India who are poor, who are from working class background, who are Dalits and mostly women also, they do not have their documents in place. And government has said that all other documents, be it Aadhaar, which is a unique identification number, be it voter ID card, they are not, you know, important and they won't be considered. So most of the people from other religious backgrounds who are poor and who do not have connections and, you know, who are actually vulnerable, who are oppressed sections of the society, will end up being part of such an exercise. Secondly, all those who are a thorn in the eyes of current regime, all sort of political opposition, all those people who are against the policies of government, be it regarding employment, be it regarding education, be it regarding the current economic slowdown, anyone who has got questions needs to fear, because they are going to be, you know, on those lists, because they are the ones who will decide that you are the citizen of this country. And we know they are in control of every single machinery of state right now. So I think every right-minded person, every sane individual, every conscientious individual must fear the consequences of such an exercise, because it's not only Muslims who are going to be, you know, made part of any such list, but everyone who is raising questions against this government. So the immediate reason seems to be to divert the attention from all that which is going on in country right now. Right now, India is reeling under tremendous economic slowdown. The unemployment rate is high. Today also, new figures have come up which says that 4.8% unemployment rate right now in country. And, you know, automobile sector, garment sector, the economy is in shambles. Students all around the country, they are protesting against fee hike, against, you know, cut in all sorts of, reliefs given to students. They're on streets. I think the current regime wants to divert attention from all these issues, but I'm not saying it's only a ploy to divert the attention. We know, BJP, RSS, we know they hate Muslims. We know they want to turn this nation, this country into a Hindu Rashtra, Hindu nation. That is part and parcel of their agenda. But the reasons are, there for everybody to see. The underlying cause is that right now this government is at its unpopular best. Everybody, all those people who were actually praising the government a couple of years back, even they are questioning its policies. So I believe that there are many reasons why the current regime has introduced this bill at the present time. But all those people who believe that, they are not going to be at the receiving end, they must reconsider, because it's not only anti-Muslim, it's anti-working class, it's anti-women, it's anti-poor, it's anti-Dalit, and it's anti, any sort of political opposition. So everybody needs to be cautious, everybody needs to be wary of the fact that this entire exercise is going to be very problematic, and it needs to be countered tooth and nail.
Well, you've mentioned a lot of people that are likely to be targeted by the amendments to the Citizenship Act, and particularly the practices involved in enforcing it. Amongst the groups that you mentioned, obviously, were the Muslims, and I don't want to focus on the Muslims at the detriment of the other groups that you mentioned, but I do think there are some particular specificities to do with that, because we know that Modi, for example, is a long-standing Hindu chauvinist. He's implicated in the Gujarat pogrom of 2002. In my view, this was a very significant event. I don't think many of our listeners know or remember that event, and I wondered if you could explain it briefly, but also tell me if you think that the Hindu chauvinism is particularly relevant in relation to the Citizenship Amendment Act.
I think it is, because this fascist regime is actually dictated by what RSS says. And RSS, all of us know, is a fascist organization, and their chief plank is, Hindutva. And by Hindutva, they never meant Hinduism, but yes, they have an idea of what this country, what this, in their eyes, what this nation should be like. And Muslims don't, even if they do, exercises like CAA and NRC will reduce them into second-class citizens of this country. And that's what RSS and BJP are actually aiming at. Way back in 2002, their principal laboratory of Hindutva politics was there. And huge programs against Muslims were implemented. And I think everyone of us who believes that fascism is to be countered, it also needs to be countered on their anti-Muslim agenda. And I believe that 2002 and after 2002, there have been many such major events. For example, riots were held in Muzaffarpur, riots were held in many Muslim-dominated neighborhoods of Delhi. What happened currently in AMU, Aligarh Muslim University, which has got many Muslim students, and in Jamia Millia Islamia University, which again has got many Muslim students, speaks volumes about the Hindutva chauvinist and, Hindu nationalist politics of BJP and RSS together. So I'm not saying that they're, you can say clear-cut targets are Muslims. They are definitely there. But in order to mount a viable counter to BJP's politics, the protests, protest and the opposition needs to be more than Muslims, and that's how you can counter them, because they want to turn it into a Hindu versus Muslim issue, and that's what they have been wishing for, because they thought that CAA is actually anti-Muslim, and apart from Muslims, nobody else will be bothered. But that's not true. Everybody who is on the streets are not only Muslims. They are from other religious groups. They are from other sections also. And this is one of the slaps in their faces, because that's not what they expected. And as one living in India, I can clearly say that right now they're also on sort of a back foot, because they are fumbling in their words, they are fumbling in their messages they are sending across, that it's not going to affect anyone living in this country, this is meant for those who have been related, but that's not paying any dividends. So it's true that the law in itself is anti-Muslim, which totally goes with what BJP RSS politics is all about, but the counter that needs to be built, the opposition that needs to be built, should not be restricted to any one religious identity. It should cut across religious identities, and that's what RSS BJP actually fear, and that answer should actually be given to them.
Well, you talked a lot of examples of the communal violence. There's an expression of that I'm particularly interested in, because I know there have been some incidents of some attacks on abattoirs, and I wondered if you could explain what the significance of these attacks has been, particularly in relation to Hindu chauvinism.
So last time when BJP came to power in 2014, they made a big hullabaloo about beef and about cows and all, how holy cows are in Hindu religion. And they actually made it a point to turn it into a divisive issue, the beef eating. And we know there are many people who practice all sort of eating practices, and not only Muslims, but in places like northeastern India, in Kerala, people from other religions also, they are beef eaters. But BJP actually and RSS actually, they were trying to turn it into a very volatile situation by making it a point that those who are eating beef are actually anti-Hindu, and they were in a way successful in launching attacks on not only abattoirs, but also people who were just, traveling somewhere, who anybody thought that might be carrying beef. They were attacked, and there were mob lynchings also in the name of beef, in the name of cow. And, couple of years, for example, in 2016, 17, 18, many such lynchings came to focus. And we know, because entire state machinery has been fascicized and has been turned in the fashion of what RSS and BJP wants it to be, not much came out of all the protests that were held, because judiciary, bureaucracy, they did not do any sort of justice. And mob lynchings, along with the attacks on abattoirs, this happened. And this was basically to divide the people on religious lines. And in a way, BJP also succeeded to an extent. It's actually coming to them as a shock, the current protests that are happening across India, because they have done away with Article 370. The Supreme Court passed a judgment on Ayodhya, on Babri Masjid, and no protest was there. But this CAA-NRC thing has actually came as a surprise to all the fascists in India right now, because they never expected it. So it's not that BJP was not mounting attacks on minorities, particularly Muslims, in you know, in the way of attacking their practices, be it eating practices, be it religious practices, be it cultural practices. BJP was doing it all along. And not, you know, much opposition could be seen in past few years. This is for the first time that such a big opposition is there, such a big protest is there. So you are true that this totally goes with their Hindu nationalist politics, their Hindutva fascist politics. And there were many such attacks, and they had given free rein to most of these mobs who are like foot soldiers of Hindutva fascism in India. And they were running amok on streets. They were attacking. They were even killing with impunity anyone they thought was, you know, not fitting in the bill. So this happened, but yes, I think for all that has happened in past 6 years, the current protests are a huge answer. And I believe that these current protests are not only against CANRC, it's against all the injustices that have been done in past 6 years in particular.
Well, there is a global sentiment of rising against governments, rising against repression. If we link many of the things that are happening across the world, some right-wing movements, some left-wing movements, what we can actually see, and also coupled, I guess, with climate change and the struggles against climate change, there is that sentiment of rising against a system that oppresses us. And some politicized people have a word for that, which is, well, global capitalism, imperialism. Other less sophisticated movements may not directly describe what they're doing as anti-capitalist. Would you characterize the protests, even though the protests in India right now are directed towards the Citizenship Amendment Act, would you characterize them at all as anti-capitalist at this point?
I won't say at this point they can be characterized as anti-capitalist, but surely as anti-fascist. But I believe there is an element of truth what you said as far as the current protests in India are concerned, because as I pointed out, whatever the policies that, you know, BJP did in the past 6 years, which led to massive unemployment, which led to massive retrenchments, which led to massive job losses in India, and also, you know, all the paraphernalia that comes along with it. Even though the movement might not be conscious of the fact that they're actually questioning government on other issues, which, you know, can be characterized as capitalist policies followed by the government, the movement itself is not conscious of it, but there is an element of it there. It surely is. But other thing that I want to point out, because as you rightly pointed out, Giselle, throughout the world right now, there are uprisings, and it's a welcome change because, you know, all those things that were thought to be invincible, they are being challenged. So that's a welcome change. But I also believe that, and in that sense, I'll bring the current protests in India to the foreground. They have more an element of spontaneity in them. So these are not very conscious movements that are actually, you know, challenging the anti-capitalism or anti-fascism, not consciously, but spontaneously. What is happening is this, that, you know, all policies are being brought in the dock. So I believe that what right now the movement lacks in India particularly is this element of consciousness, is an element of leadership, is an element of vanguard. And in that regard, that would be one of the limitations of the current movement, because to sustain it for a long time then becomes a big issue, big problem, because how to sustain it? Because everywhere protests are happening, but there is no coordination, so to speak. There is a thread joining them, but there is no concerted and organic and organized effort. So I believe that that would remain a challenge, that would remain a limitation of the movements. But as far as, you know, challenging the fascist policies of the current regime and in general fascism, the movement has been a big step forward. But, you know, all the progressive and revolutionary forces in the India as well as across the globe will have to think and devise ways in which to lend more consciousness to these movements, to make them more political, to make them, you know, not only a protest, but a sustained movement against capitalism in general. Because as we know, fascism cannot be spoken, in the context apart from capitalism. Fascism and capitalism go hand in hand. But I think the movement needs to be made more conscious and made more organic in that sense in the coming days. And that's what is one of the limitations right now.
You've been listening to Shivani Kul discussing the Citizenship Amendment Act of India, its implications for communal violence and the growing protest movement in opposition to it. And that's all we have time for on today's program of Women on the Line. Women on the Line is produced in the Melbourne studios of Community Radio 3CR. The show is funded by the Community Radio Foundation and distributed nationally via the Community Radio Network, with special thanks to the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia. If you want to get in touch with the producers of the show, you can email us at womenontheline@gmail.com. You can also download our podcast from 3CR's website, that's 3cr.org.au. Follow the links to the Women on the Line page, where you'll find all of our previous programs. Thanks for tuning into the show. I'm Giselle Hannah, and I look forward to your company again next week.
Apart. Maybe we should stop here.
Tell me, what do you need? If it's blood, I will bleed. If you want me to leave, I will leave. If it's blood, I will bleed. If you want.